Good afternoon, everyone. It's Joe Varnador. Welcome to the Tuesday afternoon non-performing call. Wow, Matt, I don't know which day I'm on or time zone I'm in. So we've got a bunch of great questions today. We've got Charles Mangan on the line. Charles is wrapping something else up right now, and we've got Mr. Matt on the phone as well. How you doing, Matt?
Doing fantastic. How are you?
Very good, very good. So it was 70 in Denver yesterday, and now it's going to be snowing tomorrow, huh?
Snowing Friday. So
it was, on Friday, okay. Very good. All right, so looks like we've got a bunch of content today, so why don't we go ahead and pull up the first question and get rolling.
All right, first question is a continuation of yesterday's call. So this is the non-performing asset that she's been looking at. So, Sarah, you are good to go.
Hey, Sarah, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, we've got to stop meeting like this.
I know.
Good deal. I'm glad to see that you're so engaged. I'll tell you, I'm very proud of you.
Oh, thanks. Basically, I was looking at this one, and I looked through all the due diligence items, but I couldn't figure out how to see what the arrearage account is.
Okay. Very good. So let's. So was that the only question you have on this one?
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect.
Well, all right. So let's pull up the box on that, Matt, and let's look for the arrearage account. Charles, did I just hear you back on?
I was playing El Frisco everywhere. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is Charles talking to us, or is she talking to somebody else, Matt?
I'm trying to figure that out.
I definitely will.
I'm going to go with someone else.
And keep in touch. See that information.
Okay, let me pull that up then. All right, sorry.
Go ahead.
I know I said last night that it goes to that the tax foreclosure was on March 31st, but I was looking into that, and it looks like it just is eligible for foreclosure then, and the sale isn't actually until between June and September.
Okay, good. Very good. Well, that kind of gives you a sigh of relief that you don't have to act so quickly and run up and try to get this thing taken care of. So, very
good.
So what
happens then if, say, they don't pay them by March 31st, then
So they have until March 31st, and that then the taxes become a lien on the property. Well, a lien on the property, and then after that, they will order a foreclosure sale, and then it would be sometime, you know, like they said, what they say, June, July, before it would actually go to sale.
Okay.
So you've got a little bit of time to kind of move forward and play with this.
Okay.
Okay, very good. So now when we're talking about the arrearage account, we're talking about taxes, right?
No, well, I saw how much it's like $3,100 or something that they owe in taxes, but I was wondering if there's like mortgage payments arrearage.
Oh, okay. And just for a little bit of a clarification as well, yes, there's two different ways to look at that, and just kind of for your and everybody else's edification on that. Typically, on a performing loan, the arrearage account would be included with the buy, and it was actually be a reperforming loan, and the arrearage account would be where the borrower, when it was modified, would have to make all of those back payments as well. So, Matt, we would have to look. There's your taxes, and we know what the taxes are, but there should be there should be the pay history. So let's look at the pay history and see if we can determine that as far as how far they're behind.
Okay. Yeah, there was a couple servicing loan payment history spreadsheets, but I couldn't figure it out.
Charles, did you make it back on the phone? This is Charles Ballywick here, so we can figure it out. But
okay, so what we got here... Can y'all hear
Charles?
Me? Yes.
Oh, yeah, barely. Yes, speak up. Yeah, Sarah's trying to figure out what the uh, what how much the borrower is actually delinquent on this particular loan.
Okay, so let's go to the top of the pay history here.
Most current would probably be best, right?
So the last pay date was 1/5 of, no, that wasn't, excuse me, that's hazard insurance. So the next payment due on this loan is 3/1 of 2013. That's, mm-hmm. you take the first payment there under the due date, and that's your next payment due.
Okay.
That doesn't change. All those other entries, those are disbursements for insurance, taxes, what have you, any preservation services. But you can look at that due date, and that's your actual day due.
So it would be however many payments between that date and now?
Correct. March okay. through the 13th through the March through the 16th. So they're almost 3 years delinquent.
And do they say the payment is $300, and just for argument's sake, say $100 of it goes to principal and $200 of it interest. Is there any breakdown in those payments, or is it just one big lump sum that they owe, or how does that work?
Well, it's just however you want to work it out. It's a, okay. I mean, they owe that much. They owe 3 years times $300. I mean, that's okay. plus any late charges and things like that, because you got late charges and any fees as far as maybe attorney fees if you pursued any legal that you can okay. collect as well. Okay. I mean, of course, likelihood of somebody coming in being able to pay that is probably slim and none. This would be something you would, if the borrowers, you can get a hold of the borrowers, you may want to try to do a modification.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
So what you have, Charles, just to be clear, so you've got the unpaid balance, and then you've got the amount past due, which would then include all of the late charges, attorney's fees, and everything else.
Correct.
Which they would also be responsible for.
Right.
Okay, and if they were to, and maybe this varies state by state, but can they include all those fees in the hardest hit fund?
That would vary. So you would want to talk okay. to the hardest hit funds, but you'd want to have a figure put together of what okay. was principal and interest and late charges, which would be your arrearages, which would be considered okay. your arrearages.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks.
Very good. What else did you have, Sarah?
That was it.
Very good. Okay. All right. What's up next, Mr. Matt?
All right, so let me pull it back. All right, so next up is Brian, and let me see if he's made it onto the call. So the first part of his content, he's got two different things. One, if time allows, and this. So we'll go through this first, and then at the end of the call, if we have time, then we'll go through his other, okay? Brian?
Hey, good afternoon.
How are you, my friend?
I'm well.
Very well, good. So
glad,
let's.
I'm glad we're not looking for snow.
Here today?
Glad we're not looking for snow here.
Where are you?
Kansas City.
Kansas City. Okay. Very good. So you're not looking for snow?
No, it's always sunny and warm here.
Oh well. I know better. So. Okay, so what kind of questions do you have on the non-performing loan you're looking at?
Well, I've had this come up on a couple of non-performing loans, and I just thought it would be helpful for some clarification for me. When I'm purchasing a land contract, it seems that some of them have promissory notes that come with them, and others do not. And I, frankly, was surprised that any of them would have a promissory note, since the terms of the deal are in the land contract. So I'm wondering if that's just a matter of state law, or is there something else that I have missed or don't understand that is generating a promissory note? And I guess that leads to the second part of this, in that if there is a note with the land contract, then do I need to be looking for an allonge? Or is the assignment of land contract sufficient for me to prove ownership if I ultimately go to an attorney for eviction foreclosure?
Okay, so it really varies by the type of land contract they use. I don't know that it's necessarily state specific. Most different companies use different types of land contracts, Brian. So we see a mixture of both. We see land contracts that have a note that's incorporated with the land contract. Okay, so it'll spell it out in land contract, but some land contracts have a promissory note that's one of the pages in the land contract. So you have to look at that land contract specifically to see if there is a separate note outlined or a separate note that's included in the land contract. Majority of our land contracts do not have notes incorporated in them, but we do have some that sell some sellers that when they create a land contract, they do incorporate that note. So if there is an actual note that's in the land contract or with the land contract, then you would have to have an allonge. So anything that has a note incorporated with it, you have to have an allonge because that is a note, so you have to have the endorsement that goes along with that note. But if there is no note, it's just a land contract, then you do not have to have an allonge to go with that.
Excellent. Now, if I ultimately then go to an attorney to start an eviction foreclosure type action, would we be suing on the note for collection, or would we be suing for eviction and possession, or both?
Well, if the land contract is not recorded, you're going to be suing on an eviction. You're going to be terminating the land contract. Okay. If the land contract is recorded, then more than likely they will need to go through the foreclosure process, because that land contract has been recorded. Again, we don't record our land contracts as a rule, but we do buy land contracts that are recorded from time to time.
Right. Okay. Thank you. That's helpful.
Charles,
thank you.
Just on that same vein, if it were a if it was the land contract and there was we're talking about equitable interest. So even if it wasn't recorded, but there was the borrower had quite a bit of equity in it, then we would still have to go ahead and proceed with foreclosure most likely, right, instead of the eviction.
Most likely you would, yes. Fortunately, we don't see a lot of equitable interest in these land contracts because they defaulted in such a short term. But, yeah, again, an attorney is going to determine that, you know, what's going to be the best case scenario for that land contract in that state. You know, it's just you make sure you identify, though, with the attorney that you are foreclosing or terminating a land contract, that you have a land contract and not a note mortgage. So, because if you don't, a lot of times if you don't just let the attorney know up front, they automatically start a foreclosure without even seeing the land contract. So you want to make sure that they're aware it is a land contract.
Very good. Brian, does that clear it up a little more as well?
Yes, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Good. And, you know, one of the other things just to mention also, and why these why the land contracts really have a lot of equitable interest in them or a little equity, is because most of the time when the sellers are when they're selling these properties, they're getting very little, maybe 5% down, something like that, when they're selling these properties. And so that's why that's done like that. So anyway, all right. What's next, Matt?
All right. So let's circle. I was going to circle back real quick. Sarah Charles was asking. She did have one more question on that. And when she is calculating past due amounts, she wants to know if she adds the P&I only amount or if she's able to add P&I T&I also as far as the amount.
No, she cannot. I mean, if she's paid taxes, if she's actually advanced the taxes, she can add the taxes that she's advanced, as well as her late charges and any attorney fees. But she's not going to add P&I and T&I if she has not advanced any taxes, first of all. So she can't. I mean, she's not going to add the T&I on there. Just only the taxes that she would have advanced on this loan.
Okay, let's go ahead and catch up with a couple of questions here real quick before we move on, Matt. So Kenny says, can you apply for hardest hit funds on land contracts? And you know the answer to that is it's going to be state by state specific. So you would need to go into the qualifications for each state or the state in which you're looking at buying that loan. And the second one there is, why is the rental estimate so different from the BPO and rent-o-meter on the Albion note? And that's the note that Sarah's looking at in Detroit that we were talking about last night. And I think I remember that, wasn't it like $600 on the BPO, and it was like $700 to $750 on Rent-O-Meter? I think I'm remembering that correctly, right?
I believe that was correct, yeah.
Yeah, it was $600 on the BPO, and I believe it was $700 or $750 on Rent-O-Meter. I can't remember if Rent-O-Meter gave a range or not. Typically, they give you a low range, a high range, and a median range. So I don't remember right offhand, but I mean, the rents fluctuate. I mean, it's, you know, different websites pull different data from different sources. Okay, so you know, you're going to have to kind of figure, you know, you're going to have to take it, well, low on a low side, it'd be $600, $750 on a high side. But I mean, you know, they get their data from different places. So you know, I'm really honestly not sure where they all get. How to pull from.
And you know, that's like, you know, a BPO or an appraisal. I mean, it just depends on the comps that you pick. And, you know, anybody that does those will tell you that's an art and not a science. So there is going to be differences. So if you look at four different BPOs on the same piece of property, you're going to have four different values. I was looking at one the other day, and it was like 47 was the low and 97 was the high, and it was the same property, just four different opinions of value. Okay, Robin has a question, Charles, back to that pay history on that non-performing loan there on, I think it's Albion. She said, curious, why are there so many of the disbursements such small amounts, less than $50?
Typically, they disperse hazard insurance, or forced place insurance is usually a monthly disbursement. You'll see a lot of disbursements that may be 95 cents, and many times when the servicers, what they do is when they get these bills, they average these bills out based on the hours spent on those files, and they'll disperse so much from each loan file. So you just can't... you'll always see multiple disbursements, especially from this particular servicer of this pay history, Robin. But they're various expenses that they cut out every month. They also show as a negative and a positive on there. So you may see the entries twice as a minus and then a positive. That's just an accounting practice accounting function, how they balance. So you'll always see an entry and it may be offset with another entry, the same amount but a negative balance. But so it's not, it's only, you only look at the positive about disbursements on there is what you look at.
Good deal.
Basically what you're looking at is the payments. You want to see where there's been a principal and interest payment. If you see a disbursement for $25, $30 a month, that's typically your forced placed insurance. But don't get real wrapped around with all the transactions you see on a pay history, because many pay histories will have a lot of transactions on there that really don't, you know, really are servicing transaction fees and things like that that you really don't want to get just all wrapped up in.
Right. Okay, and Mark Bruce, he has a question here. He says, if I buy an asset that has a recorded land contract, should I re-record the assigned land contract?
Okay, so if you have a recorded land contract, Mark, you'll get an assignment. And when you get that assignment, you're going to record that assignment of land contract. So the rule of thumb is if you get a land contract that's recorded, always record your assignment of land contract and record your deed. If you get a land contract that's unrecorded, you do not assign your assignment of land contract because it's unrecorded. So you can't record that assignment because there's no deed of record or land contract of record. You would only record the deed.
Okay, very good. And then back to Kenny, I guess, so Matt, did you relook at that, the BPO, I mean the estimated rents on that Albion property on the BPO was $350?
Yeah, the fair market on the BPO was $350, yes.
And that was a fair market rent?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I think that must have been some type of typo, because I know that looking at that house, I know that it would rent for somewhere. It may not rent for $750, but I'm sure it's somewhere around $650 on that. Wouldn't you think, Charles?
Yeah, I would say at least $650, $675, Joe.
Yeah.
It was a nice little house. I mean, once it's rented.
Yeah, great little brick house there. So, and low crime neighborhood. And so let's see. And Dwayne says, this is off topic a bit, but does anyone have the contract? Okay. Let's come back to that. Or we can go ahead and answer this. Dwayne is just asking for the contact name at Equity Trust that is specific for handling note school deals. Is that on the website, Matt?
Yes. So
Charles, do you know?
Go ahead, Matt.
Well, on our website, we have on our vendor page, which is our resources down to vendors, clicking on the Equity Trust page, and then it has the supervisor there for
Equity Trust.
Thank you.
Okay.
And they're kind.
And John, and Charles knows John Bowens very well. As a matter of fact, I was with him in San Francisco this past weekend. So, and just call into that to the phone number there and ask for John. If he's not in, just let them know you're a note school student, and then they will get you to somebody that's taking care of note school students. All right, so who do we have next here? Charles Sullivan.
Charles, go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Charles, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks.
Very good, my friend. Let's see. So what do you have here? You've got a non-performing second lien that you're trying to work through. So why don't you go ahead, obviously we can read there on the screen, but just go ahead and kind of fill us in on this one.
My workout strategy at the moment is to try to acquire the first trust note before it goes to foreclosure, and I wanted to know what the ramifications are of doing that or not doing it. Specifically in relation to what happens to the liens that are behind me.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. So this is a second lien we were talking about. This was a second lien, correct, Charles?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right. So you're looking at buying the second lien.
No, I have the second lien. My question is, I've contacted, let me go back a second, the first trust holder, Bank of New York Mellon Trust, filed a Liz Pendens in October of 2012 and another one in 2015, October of 2015. So I've contacted the attorney that filed the most recent Liz Pendens to see if I could buy the note from Bank of New York Mellon Trust. And my question is, assuming that I could buy the note at a decent price, what happens to the liens behind me, and am I better off not buying the note or buying the note? Because I'm trying to get control of the property. That's the goal.
Well, you'd be better off if you could buy the note, because if they filed a Liz Pendens, and are they paying the first lien holder?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Is the borrower currently paying the?
No,
they're not. So they're in a foreclosure. So when they foreclose, they're going to wipe out your second lien.
That's correct.
So you would want to, if you could buy the first lien position, that's what you would want to do, is buy the first lien. So they don't wipe you out, and you would have control of the note.
So my question is, what happens when I do that, and assuming that I can get a deed in lieu out of the borrower, what happens to the liens, the other liens on the property that are behind my second trust?
Well, you're not going to be able to record the deed in lieu. You're going to have to foreclose in order to wipe those liens out. You could go ahead and get a deed in lieu, just not record it. But they give you a deed in lieu, but you'd still have to pursue with a foreclosure. Go ahead and pursue the foreclosure to wipe out the remaining liens behind your second lien, if there are liens behind your second lien.
Very good. Next question is, do banks typically listen to offers from people like me to purchase first trust notes when they're making rumblings about foreclosure?
Well, if you can, Charles, if you can get through to the right person, they might. But I can tell you, for dealing with big banks, major banks, it's hard to get into the right person to negotiate. You know, it's hard to do that. You can send a letter to, I guess you might be able to get a copy of the list pendants or find out the attorney that filed it and then get a contact person there that they deal with to contact them. Or you may even be able to contact their attorney.
I have a copy of the list pendants, and so as I said in my original posting, I have left a message with her. Is typically the attorney that files the list pendants, are they ever in a position or have any desire to negotiate on behalf of their bank client?
They could. I mean, they're going to ultimately call the bank their client and get the approval through them. But, you know, you're probably going to be better off trying to negotiate through their attorney than trying to reach them directly.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Another question. What is a range of reasonable offers to make on the UPB of the first trust? 50%, or should I start a lower offer on the front end?
Well, on the front end, I can tell you I don't see that a bank is going to take. I guess you're going to have to look at what the equity is. Is there any equity in the property? What's the first?
No.
First is 46.5.
There's no equity at all.
Okay, so value is $60,000. The first lien holder is 46.5, right?
That's correct. I think the UPB is probably pretty close to that number because I don't think the borrower made payments for very long.
Yeah, I mean, you could go in there and you could start. I'll be honest, they're not likely going to take 50 cents on their balance. They've got the first lien, so why would they? If they've already filed their foreclosure, but you know what I calculate is kind of what the cost would be, and probably go in there and say, okay, I'll offer you, you know, 30. Start somewhere around 30 on that. I mean, you could go lower, but if they feel like you're out of the, if they feel like you're not serious, a lot of times they won't even respond.
Right. When you say 30, are you referring to 30% or 30 grand?
No, 30 grand.
So that's about 65-70% of the UPB.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I just pulled a figure out there. I mean, I'm just throwing out a figure there. But I think if you went there at 20 or 23, I don't think it's likely they're going to do that.
So Charles Sullivan, is this something that you just want for yourself, or is this something you're trying to? You're trying to foreclose.
Well, my ultimate goal is if I can get control of the asset for a reasonable price, it's the 50-50.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I think this could be an exercise in futility as far as trying to deal with the bank. I mean, I would chase the attorney as long as that makes sense, and then like Charles said, I don't see it going for any less than probably 60-75% of the UPB, and if you offer anything lower than that, I don't know that that's going to be a doable deal, and they'll just kind of blow it off.
Well, one last question: when I make the original offer or initial offer, should I give them a dollar amount or should I say a percentage of the UPB? Because I don't know exactly what their UPB is.
Well, I would, yeah, I wouldn't just say, I mean, I would probably, I'd probably just go in there and I would talk to the attorney first, Charles. I wouldn't go in there and offer a percentage. I'd probably just go in there and say, look, I'm willing to give them $35,000 for their note, okay? Come up with a figure in your mind that you think, okay, this is what it's going to be worth to me. This is what I could resell it, because you're going to foreclose and I don't know what your exit strategy is going to be on the property. And it looks like a pretty nice little house. So, you know, again, if you went back in there and created notes, you're probably going to sell it for more than 60. But back to your question, I'd probably just go in there and make them an offer that, you know, that you think they'll entertain and that to you, that it'll be worth it to you to pursue.
Very good. Thank you, Charles. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Charles. Let us know if you have any more questions.
All right, man.
Thanks.
All right.
By the way, Lisa, I just answered everyone, but Michael's no longer with Equity Trust. He's doing something else at this point. So John Bowens with Equity Trust would be the best contact person.
All right, Joe, we ready to go to the next question? Or we want to
move on, man.
I just didn't know if we were caught up on the board or not. So.
Yep, I checked it, and we're good.
All right. So, Teresa, you're unmuted if you want to go ahead.
Thank you.
Hi, Teresa. It's Joe and Charles. Hi. How you doing?
Good, guys. How are you?
Very well.
I'm getting started, and so I was just doing some research, and I ran across a website that had redemption. It was a chart. It had redemption periods attached to each of the foreclosure projected time frames, and I hadn't really heard that topic come up in processing non-performing notes, so I was just curious how you guys deal with that period and how it impacts the analysis and your exit strategies, et cetera.
Well, as far as redemption periods, I mean, we know that if we foreclose in some states, we're going to have redemption periods. It really doesn't affect the way we price our assets. I mean, if we have to hold them for a period of time for the redemption to expire, we'll do so. But it really doesn't affect the way we price our notes.
So does it? Do you factor the redemption period in when you're prioritizing how to go after particular markets? Is that a factor, or is it not really a big deal?
Well, it is. If you're looking at, it just depending on what your exit strategy is going to be. I mean, it's some you may have to hold some of them for 6 months. I mean, I've got a few that I'm having to that I'm just holding for 6 months now, just trying to let the redemption period expire.
Okay. So the basic approach is to hold it until the period expires and then do something with the asset.
Right. We don't look at the redemptions when we're pricing the pools of assets.
And, the other thing is Charles, especially with these redemption periods, number one, it depends on if this was a house that was a homestead or if it was an investment property for someone. So that wouldn't apply if it wasn't a homestead. Correct, Charles?
Correct, yes.
And then the second part of that, and this is just, I'm just kind of bringing this up because I've never done this, but I've heard people tell me that they have. And knowing that the borrower is most likely not going to be able to redeem that property, have you seen people go in, Charles, and try to work with the seller to give them a little money to waive that right of redemption?
You can do that if you do that prior to your foreclosure or try to negotiate that. You can get them to waive that redemption. So that is a possibility that you can do that.
Okay. So does he understand that, Teresa, then before you did the foreclosure, if you wanted to negotiate with them, and basically, that's going to be very similar to a cash for keys, but obviously if you can't get a hold of them or they won't respond to your contact methods, then that wouldn't be something that you could do. But obviously if you were talking to them and certainly have them go ahead and sign a deed in lieu instead of you having to foreclose, then that would be that redemption period would go away.
Okay. And one follow-up question. When you're holding those properties, assuming they're vacant, the handling costs, if you will, that you build into the cost of doing business, is that just sort of a property management expense type?
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean you gotta maintain the property, So it's just like your property management expense basically. It's a preservation cost that we just calculated for holding costs.
So Charles, here's something else, and like I said, I've not done this, but I know of other people that have, and that is obviously you can't get clear title until you have until that redemption period is over, but could you rent that property, put somebody in it, or does it have to sit vacant for that period of time?
Well, Joe, here's the thing on the rental part, and I've known people that have rented them, especially if the property's vacated, the people cannot be found, the likelihood of them coming back is slim to none. But you could rent that property, but I would highly recommend that you don't sign a lease with anybody.
Right.
Because they have to understand that, you know, technically that borrower could come back and say, I want my house. And, of course, they have to come forthcoming with all the money, but, you know, which is not likely that could happen. But you still got to prepare yourself that if it did, what would I do? Also, in many states, and I've been told this, is that if a borrower came back and said, hey, technically, I want those rents that you have collected on that property, that redemption period, if it's during that redemption, technically that rent could be due to that borrower.
Yeah, that's true. That's another part of that. But, you know, the other thing, Teresa, also is that, gosh, I think I just completely lost my train of thought. I had a senior moment there. Here's what it was. So understand that they're not just coming in and bringing the loan current. They have to bring everything in, which would be all of the costs as well as any unpaid balance. So it wouldn't be just bringing the loan current. The unpaid balance was $200,000, and there was another $40,000 in costs and all of that. They would have to bring in the $240,000 on that loan. Correct, Charles?
That's correct. They have to be the full payoff.
Right. That doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean that time period is going to shorten because of that. But we, you know, we all know that's highly, highly, highly unlikely unless somebody were to win the Powerball or something. I think so.
Agreed. Thank you,
okay,
gentlemen.
Okay. What else, Teresa? Is that it?
That'll do it. Thank you very much.
Very good. These were good questions today, Charles.
They are very good questions.
All right. What's up next, Matt?
All right. So up next, we have Raymond. And, yeah. Let me pull him up.
Raymond on the phone?
I'm not finding him. Maybe, I think he said someone else might be on. So let me.
Maybe Huber.
Who's that?
It might be Herbert, or is it Herbert or Hubert?
Hubert, I think it's Hubert.
Hubert, yeah, Hubert Lou, okay. Hubert, are you on?
I have, there's a call and a mic, so both of them are unmuted, so if Hubert wanted
hey,
to.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Hubert, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Very good, long time no see, man.
I just saw you last weekend.
Just saw me in San Francisco last weekend. That's correct.
Yes, I did.
Very good. So, Hubert, man, he's out there setting the world on fire. So, Hubert, what do you have here that you want to go over this afternoon?
We purchased a non-performing note with unrecorded land contract. And we knew the property already abandoned because our local contact told us the front door was kicked and wide open. So we're just curious if we can have a possession of this house, or we need to find an attorney to terminate the land contract so we have the mutual release.
Right, and so Hubert, and it's a unrecorded land contract, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so you still want to contact an attorney, but because and let them know that you have a land contract against with this borrower, that the property has been abandoned, and make sure you mention that it has been abandoned, because in a lot of cases that's just a real short process since they've already abandoned the property. So. Good question. You definitely want to talk to the attorney, but you do want to let the attorney know that the property has been abandoned, because basically that's like an eviction notice. In most states, they can just do like an eviction notice and the ownership will revert back to you is what I'm trying to say. But you still want to go through the attorney.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, the NAA is going to refer the local attorney. to do this. So basically, that's an eviction notice, not a foreclosure.
Correct. Correct.
Very good.
Hey, Charles. Charles, they have the right. They need to go in and secure that property.
Yes. Now, if the door's been kicked in, Hubert, you can go in there and have the house secured. Okay? So if there's any damage, anything to prevent future damage to the home, you can go ahead and take that. You can go ahead and have that done now. You don't have to wait till you take possession of the property.
You have sure. The right to protect your collateral, Hubert, so I'd make sure you go ahead and get that done.
Sure, yeah, we are going to secure the property.
Yeah, you go ahead and do that.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, very good, Hubert, and you just carry on, man. You're doing great.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So Kathy has a question here. Kathy Woodson, she says, Kevin has discussed this extensively on the Wednesday calls. She might want to search by topic. I'm not sure what Kathy's talking about there. You may want to unmute her real quick, Matt, or I can do it.
She is unmuted.
Kathy? Kathy? Okay, Kathy, you may be self-muted, so if you are, you'll probably want to unmute yourself. Okay, so she may not be able to communicate that way today. So let's see, and Hubert asked, we answered the question, can you rent the property out? Andrea says, would you be able to provide a document for the owner to sign after receiving the dollars for the keys? A document that would reflect such an agreement and release for liability, if any. Charles?
Yeah, you draw up a cash for keys agreement. A lot of attorneys will have a cash. They'll draw up some type of agreement. They're not just going to give them the cash without them signing a waiver and some type of release or liability release. So you would just ask the attorney for that.
Very good. Yeah, and you know, and Michael says, can't see the purchase of the redemption. You know, again, you just got to be careful if you're going to do that, that they will waive those rights as far as purchasing the redemption, buying them out, basically a cash for keys situation. They could always come back and say, well, I really didn't understand what I was signing and that type of thing. So you got to have to be pretty careful with that. Right, Charles?
Right. Correct.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So what do we have next there, Mr. Matt?
I believe where she was going with that was if you go to your, and I'm talking about Kathy here, sorry. If you go to your Connect tab and go down to the News and Archives section, and then you can actually go in to the archives, as you can see today's calls up here with the documents. And like I wanted to look up hardest hit funds. I can search the archives for that, and all the archives that have hardest hit funds in their name or in their tags will be brought up, and you can look up hardest hit funds that way. Or you can look up, if it was Kevin's, you can look up the round table. So any of the round table calls, it'll pull up, and you can go to your round table sections that way. So
very good. Yeah, and that's perfect. Okay, and there's a couple of different sites out there. Stopforeclosure.com, I believe that may be where Teresa was looking there, but that's another one as well. Okay, so why don't we go ahead and take care of Brian's other questions here and get those knocked out of the way.
Sounds good.
Brian, back on?
Great, thank you. I appreciate you putting me back on. This is it's great to hit a double on a conference call.
There you go. All right, so what do we have here, Brian?
Well, I just received today the judgment of eviction foreclosure on land contract, and the buyer has a 90-day right of redemption, and I respect that. I don't have any problem with that. But since they're not paying me, I'm assuming that either they're not going to be able to come up with the money to exercise that right of redemption. So my concern is, how do I protect myself or the property during this 90-day redemption period? What are the best ways to go about doing that? And ideas I had was to have somebody approach them for cash for keys, I'm a little haunted now that Charles mentioned earlier in this call that that was an avenue that was for before foreclosure. Another idea I've got is to pay off a neighbor to be a snitch for me and call if there's a problem.
Okay, let's go back. And you got a good point here. So cash for keys typically is conducted before when they're trying to negotiate some type of eviction on the property. It's not saying that you can't go ahead and do it after the fact. So here in your case, you're trying to prevent them from trashing the house. And yes, so that's a great recommendation there. Go have a door knocker, or either contact them if you've got their contact information, but they're still living in the property. Have someone contact them, reach out to them and say, hey, look, the owner wants to give you $750. Condition is you'll be out by this date and the property will be clean in good condition. I mean, clean and broom swept condition. That's worth a shot. At this point, they know they're probably going to be evicted here pretty quick. I mean, it's at the end of the rope for them now. So that would probably actually be my recommendation there. You can get the neighbor to be a snitch, but that neighbor's not going to prevent them from knocking holes in the walls and taking the plumbing and light fixtures and all that, Brian. So
okay.
There's not a lot that neighbor's going to be able to do other than just kind of keep an eye on the house itself. But they're not going to prevent that borrower from tearing up your house. The best way to do it is, try to make an offer with the, most people offer cash for keys before the foreclosure in an effort to get them out of the house sooner,
So that they don't have to go through the foreclosure process, right. Therefore there is no right of redemption and all of that.
Right,
in your case, you're trying to keep the house in good condition without them destroying it. So again, a cash for keys offer is a good offer. I mean, it's a good remedy to try to resolve that. And a lot of them, at this point, I guess you'd have to kind of see what the, that would probably pay their first month's rent somewhere. And that's typically what I used to look at is, okay, how much is it going to cost for these people to go put up a deposit and rent an apartment or something? And that's kind of how I would determine my cash for keys. Okay, I'd offer them $1,000, which was a first month's rent, and maybe a $500 deposit or something, just depending. So,
yeah, and the other part of that, Brian, is that especially if you're trying to negotiate a cash for keys prior to having to foreclose, the factors you would want to look at would be how much is it going to cost me to foreclose, number one, and then number two, what's the time period for me to foreclose, and then number three, what's the redemption period? So obviously, if it's $2,000 to foreclose and it's going to be take 4 months to do the foreclosure and then it's going to be another 90 days in redemption, then obviously what's that four and three, that 7 months worth to you? So it may be the $2,000 for the foreclosure and it may be another $1,000-$1,500 for the lost time. So now after the fact the $750, but before the fact, I mean, I'd rather go ahead and offer them a little more money if they'll go ahead and move out, and obviously you're not going to give them the money until they're out and you've had the house inspected. But so it really depends on the time frame there. Is it pre-foreclosure? Is it after the foreclosure has been done?
Right, and I guess the question then logistically, if I go that route, is that something that I should expect my servicer to handle the logistics and the handling of the money and make all those arrangements?
Yes, I think so. Right, okay.
Yeah,
Troy?
No, it is.
Good. Okay. I'm sure they will. I just wanted to know if I was asking them to do something extraordinary or if that is something that's in their wheelhouse. So that's good to know. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Right. Let's see. Bob Bullinger, did you get his – I think you answered Bob's questions, didn't you? What state was the 90-day in? What state was the – okay. And is that common? All states, some have 7 days, some have – 90 days. I'm not sure. California used to be 12 months.
Some have 12 months, and I think there's a couple States of 2 years. So, Matt, do we have it on our member site? Joe, I'm not sure. Is there a redemption chart on our member site anywhere?
I don't know, but you can go to stopforeclosure.com, Matt.
That doc.
It'll show you.
Sorry, Joe.
No, go ahead. If you've got that document where you could pull it up, sure, that'd be great.
That document is in the handouts for today's call. So if they wanted to open that up, and there is, if you go to, and I'll look it up. I believe there is a thing online that talks about foreclosure. It's on our member site, but if you give me a second. But
okay.
That document that they're sending is on the handouts for everybody.
Now, Charles, correct me if I'm wrong here, but
or Teresa,
the redemption period is only if there is a mortgage and note. If it was a deed of trust, trustee deed of trust, would that right of redemption still apply?
Yeah, it still does. Redemption is not just because it's a laying contract. That's note or mortgage. I mean, note mortgages have redemptions just like laying contracts do.
Okay, so I couldn't remember if that was the case there. So, okay, very good. All right, what else do we have? Teresa does say, with regard to the question, what document would you have them sign? And Charles, I don't know if there would be a boilerplate document for them to sign to waive that right of redemption. I've not seen one. Is there?
Again, when you're talking to the attorney that you're going to get to terminate the land contract, you want to make sure that you talk to that attorney about some type of waiver notice, having the borrower sign a waiver notice. But they're going to have to make contact, and you're going to have to be, you know, if you can't track down a borrower, it's not likely they're going to come in and just sign a document. It's just not going to happen. So you want to make sure that you've got some type of contact, or the attorney can contact the borrower. And again, keep in mind that these borrowers are not going to are probably not going to be real cooperative there, because they're getting ready to be evicted out of their home. They're getting ready to lose their house. So they're going to be bitter. They're not going to be happy campers. So again, that's something you may have to go back and offer them $500 if they sign that waiver of redemption rights. So you may have to offer them a cash offer there as well. So, you know, you can offer them cash for keys or cash for redemption rights. I mean, there's, you know, that, you know, sometimes money talks. I mean, again, because you're taking somebody's home away from them. So a lot of borrowers, majority of the borrowers, are not going to be willing to cooperate a lot, I wouldn't think.
Hey, Charles, and I had somebody ask me this question the other day, and I wasn't 100% sure, but I thought I knew the answer to that. And so we've got somebody that is renting a house that the borrower hasn't paid a payment on in 3 or 4 years, but is renting it out, and this gentleman and his wife are living there, and they're paying their rent, and they wanted to try to buy the house. Well, the foreclosure had been initiated on the property twice, and the foreclosure sale had been canceled at the last minute on both of those. So what that indicates is that's probably one of those zombie houses where there was no way to identify who actually owned the loan.
Right.
So would the best thing to do on that, file for quiet title and just wait on that, wait it out, or what would be the best thing to do on that?
Well, that's probably the only thing you could do, Joe, is file for a quiet title. Again, I'm not an attorney.
Played one on TV. I saw you the other night.
Yeah, dude. You know, that was Judge Judy. Okay. But you'd probably have to file a quiet title, Joe, on something like that.
And I mean, that could take 6 or 7 years, correct?
I don't know that it'd take that long. Depends. Again, it's going to be state specific, and it depends on which state you're in. If you get in some place like New York, yes, it's going to take you a while. But you know, a quiet title could take, you know, it's hard to say. It could take 6 months. It could take 2 years. It's hard to say. Just again, it depends on which state you're in.
Right. And Good. I'm glad I answered that correctly. But that's what I thought it was. But yeah. Okay. So, Matt, let's see. What do we have anything else?
So to answer that question, as far as do we have that on the member site, if you go to the resource tab, go down to helpful websites, scroll down to the F through M, go to the foreclosure law comparison, which is driven through Realty Track, and we have all the redemption periods as well as the states. And if you click on the state, it gives a little bit more information on the state itself. But that's on the member site, and this is a handout that we have. So, but we do have it on the member site, just so everyone knows.
Excellent. That's perfect, Matt. Okay, so looks like we just have some housekeeping there for a couple of things there. So you want to go through those, Matt?
Well, we got one more picture, by the way, from the Great Hawaii Adventure, and this is 5 o'clock in the morning, a volcano erupting. So.
Now, I understand they went to see this volcano erupt. It didn't erupt there where Eddie and family are staying.
It was not a heroin. Yeah, it wasn't something that caused them to be concerned, I believe. So you would have heard a lot more about it, I'm sure. So.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, that's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. So. And again, that's out my front window now. So, or at least I'm going to get a picture and put it in there. So, but anyway.
Still no picture of Eddie Vito.
I think we should get it and have it on the call with him and surprise him with it. Be like, hey, we got some pictures of you, and here you go, and just see what he says about it.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
He might actually become speechless.
There you go. Yeah.
And Charles, I mean, you probably know a little bit more about this since you're in the office, but the titanium emails have gone out. As far as for the April 14th through 16th. So those should have gone out, and if you haven't received them, let us know. But you can register by going to the website that's there. There's going to be the meetup, and then I know there's going to be a game that they're going to take everybody to, and I think there might even be a – is that the one that they're going to feed them to, or is that the
you're talking about the Titanium Mastermind?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to do a Rangers versus the Orioles game at Texas Stadium here, or Rangers Stadium, excuse me. And also we'll do a barbecue one night. So anyway, it's going to be a great event. Definitely got some in-depth planning going on here now in our office, and definitely going to have a great Mastermind Titanium.
And it is, like I was showing, it's the accommodations, the hotel that they can stay at. Is there a lot of stuff around the American Airlines Conference Center, or is that mainly the main hotel there, the building to stay at?
No, it's main. I mean, I think there's cafeteria stuff, and there's some restaurants within driving distance, but nothing within walking distance, Matt.
Okay. But they do have a special rate, especially for the Titanium, which is $99 a night. So you give them the ID code, and that'll be the same thing for the Summer Summit, I believe, too. So, speaking of,
right. Is Summer Summit going to be at the American Airlines Training Center?
I'm sorry, what, Joe?
Is Summer Summit going to be at the same venue?
No. Summer Summit's not going to be it's going to be actually. Where is our Summer Summit, Matt? Have they released that yet? It's not going to be at the American Airlines, but Joe, to answer your question.
Okay. They on the page, they have it as the American Airlines, so I don't know if that's changed.
Well, it must be then.
It's that, yes, the will be held June 3rd and 4th at American Airlines Conference Center, so as a two-day mentoring on steroids. So they must have changed that, Charles.
Okay.
Or they. This is an old link. I'll circle around and find out about that for the next call.
Very good. And you've got Martha's Mastermind for the ladies that's coming up.
It is. And like I was saying, I believe it is. It's April 29th. So next month, into next month. The emails have gone out on that, and I believe it's pretty close to being filled up. But if you still wanted to come, make sure to email and you know, see if that can be accommodated. I think there may be one or two spots left. If so, that would.
Yeah, I know the emails have gone out on that, and I saw those.
Did you register for it?
I did.
Okay, good. The other thing is that the email for any post-closing issues needs to go to, or anything that, if you have an issue, like you haven't received your collateral files, you received your collateral files and there's not an executed document for the assignment or something like that, email post-closing at colonialfundinggroup.com with that concern or that issue, and that'll go to the right people, and we'll be able to get that response back to you. We've kind of just started this, and we're getting it off the ground so that we can get the responses to people who are buying the assets in a quicker manner, and they don't get mixed up with the trade desk or the offering desk or the help desk. So just so if you have a question on an asset you've bought as far as the documents or any closing issues, email post-closing at colonialfundinggroup.com and we'll get back to you within a day, or within, it should be that day. So.
Very good. Okay. Well, Charles, I know you said last night there's a few more assets that are available on that last tape that went out.
There definitely is, Joe. So if people are still interested in assets, we still have some on the member site.
Very good. Well, it looks like we covered everything today, and it's we're right on time. So we appreciate you guys. We appreciate you being on the call, and thanks for getting the questions in. And make sure and get your questions posted up for calls. I think we had a lot of great content questions today that we have a lot of new folks in, and this is all stuff that everybody has a question, or that sometimes you don't know what you don't know. And these calls are sure a great way to get that taken care of. So anyway, talk to everybody soon. Kevin will be on tomorrow afternoon, and then we'll have the performing call again on Thursday. Everybody have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye, Charles. Bye, Matt.
Thanks,
take care, guys.
See you later. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Oh, and hey, by the way, one more thing before everybody hangs up.
Yes?
Yes.
Hey, wanted to let everybody know that Bob Repass, Bob's wife, Angie, her mother passed away. And so you guys remember Bob and Angie in your prayers and so on. And if you want to send an email to Bob and or Angie, you can certainly do so on that. So just wanted to let everybody know that that's the case. So like I say, if you have anything you want to send them, just make sure and go ahead and do that. All righty, guys. We'll talk soon. Goodbye, everybody.